It's Mike Shope.
We were having a very serious conversation about mayonnaise here.
And the Bulldog.
And don't even talk to me about weed.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
I want to say something like, I hate to admit this. I guess I don't, because I'm going to. Beautiful day. I love it when it's windy. Go outside, touch some grass.
I hate the wind.
The river, you know, just sort of feels like living. When it's windy, it's like active. But what did I do instead? I ended up on, nothing against the site, because I love the site. I'm a subscriber. Defector, reading an article about how the CBC is dead as a hockey provider. Mm-hmm. And Lauren Thiessen wrote it. And it included, which I had not seen yet, like a 13-minute, the 13-minute open to Game 7. I watched the whole thing. And it was just, it's so good, right? It's Sportsnet, CBC, it's so good.
The Sabres-Canadians.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
But it was just so sad, too, right?
That's
Ron McLean, our friend Ron McLean, took me back. I'm not sure we've really given that enough time yet, talking about it. It's been a month-ish. Matt Larkin with us now from, sorry to start on such a down note here, Matt, from Daily Faceoff. Did you enjoy the playoffs? I mean, we did for a while.
We're still a little sad, Matt. We're still a little sad.
Oh, fellas. Well, okay, I'm going to pick you up, okay? One of my highlights of the playoffs was being in KeyBank Center for Game 1 against Boston and seeing you guys on the Jumbotron and emotional. And that was a special start.
Right, okay.
Ending the 15-year drought. There wasn't a dry eye in the house, and I was even getting a little teary-eyed. So I appreciated seeing you guys up there.
Is this O Canada, you mean?
No. He means the game opens that we with our sons. And,
yes, thank you, Matt.
Yeah, thanks.
The montage, right?
We had no idea. I mean, I knew. I went and was recorded and filmed and whatnot. I had no idea what they were going to do with that, and it blew my mind when I found out that it was the first thing that was going
to
play.
It's so nice of you to mention that.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
And then we had...
Oh, I loved it. I was happy
and my
to be
son,
there. I felt privileged to be part of it.
My son started covering the Sabres this year, Matt, and was in the press box watching that. Like, he's 24 years old now. And that had to be a moment for... He's sitting there like, oh, my God, they're not going to show me now, are they? just to juxtapose how long it's been.
And my son was at the watch party.
Right. It was a pretty cool moment for all of us. So thanks for bringing it up.
I thought maybe I got confused. You could have meant Game 5, which was when the... Anthem singer's mic cut out, and we were on that too.
Because we were sitting in the stands, or standing in the stands, and we were featured on. Like we both got all kinds of hits on social media from people that saw us.
Sportsnet,
yeah.
But
oh yeah,
and I was asked about this actually earlier today. I wanted to be singing along, but my voice was shot, so I couldn't, partake. But it was another special time in there. Well, I mean. What do you want to say, Matt, in conclusion of this Sabre season? Like, they seem pretty back. They're not getting that much love or respect in the betting markets for next year. And there's, of course, plenty that's going to happen before we know how it all is going to set up for next year. But I know you would say, like, the Sabres did a great thing this year, sort of bringing this all back to life.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the year was obviously an unabashed success and having the best record in the league from the start of the streak on December 9th and winning around, not just squeaking in and being happy to be there, but actually winning around, being pretty dominant in the first round of the playoffs, getting to a Game 7 against Montreal, back and forth series. I was in the building for Game 7 as well. And it was special. And I think if there's a reason why there's some trepidation on seeing them, it's just with all these contracts and not a lot of cap space, of course. Now there's the Bo Byram situation to worry about as well. But with Zach Benson and Alex Tuch and Peyton Krebs, obviously Michael Kesselring, that's been resolved now. But it's just hard to know, okay, what is this team going to look like? Who's going to be gone? Is Yarmo going to be able to improve this group, or are we looking at status quo? Overall, I remain mostly bullish. And one reason is just Konstantelainis, what we saw from him in a little taste. And I just think that he is going to be an important player next year, and I think he's going to help drive this team forward. So it's important to have appreciating assets in the group as well, which I think Buffalo does have.
Yeah. We'll see what ends up happening. Obviously, the draft is here in Buffalo next weekend, and that, of course, precedes July 1, and that's the drop-dead date, you presume, on any Alex Tuch you know, conversation about him staying here. What do you think they should do with Tuck? Do you think they should just sort of swallow hard and let him leave because he's going to be, he's 30 and 8 years at like maybe close to $11 million or something, might not age well? Like, where do you come down on what to do with Tuck?
It's funny, I've kind of surprised myself with how I've changed my thinking as I've just looked more and more at Buffalo's cap situation, because of course you don't want to lose the momentum that you've gained. And by removing your veteran, most of the time, first line right winger, it's hard to stay afloat. But I just look at Zach Benson. To me, the breakout he had, I think that changes things. And what I mean is, he was so good, I think he's become such a priority that if you bring back Alex Tuck, you are going to force Zach Benson into a bridge deal situation. And we've seen that around the league. The example I always think of is Evan Bouchard in Edmonton. If you have to give the guy a bridge deal who's clearly already worth more than that, you're going to get hit hard on the next extension. Mm-hmm. And then it creates a whole other complication. So I actually think Zach Benson is a bigger priority than Alex Tuck. If Tuck walks, well, that's a big chunk of change that opens up. And of course, it does mean that Jarmo Kekäläinen has to replace him. And the market, the UFA market's not that good, so you're going to have to go into the trade market, I think. So if I'm just kind of dreaming up scenarios, for example, if Alex Tuck goes and he gets $11 million, $12 million in the open market, well, maybe you call the St. Louis Blues and you check in on someone like Jordan Kyrou, who could replace in terms of production, not necessarily play style, on the first line.
You know, I liked how that all went when you were talking there, Matt. I mean, that you changed your position on it. Because I feel more like where you have ended up here, which is like, okay, well, I mean, it's one, the Sabres for so long, and Bulldog and I have talked about this so many times, have been a team where, oh, well, there's this pipeline of prospects, you know, that's coming. So, you know, we're always getting rid of guys. But this year, I want to trust it. And that's Helenius, and that's Benson, and that's even Kulik, who missed most of the season.
Osland, too.
And Osland, like, this year, I want to trust it. These are not wallflowers. These are not players who are completely on spec out of the minor leagues. But I know also what that sounds like, especially around here, where we've done that so many times. And last year, they got me, if not us, with Zucker. And even like Greenway, I guess, or Samuelson, who was under contract, veterans who they kept in the name of they wanted to be here. And like, I don't want to play like that. I mean, what kind of a organization is this? But I mean, man, Zucker really meant a lot. And Samuelson was kept and he had a very good season. Big jump in terms of offense. So, yeah, like I'm sitting here on a team that finally got good with a 30-goal scorer. And I'm at peace with his leaving, which is different for me.
Yeah, and the other thing, the other point I should make, too, is Peyton Krebs. To me, he's someone who surprised me. I thought his game popped a lot more than I expected to, especially when he was playing first line in the playoffs. And he's another RFA. And if you're talking about Zach Benson, well, it's easy to take your eye off the ball with Peyton Krebs. And he, to me, is someone who actually could be a target for an offer sheet. People might think Zach Benson, but no, Buffalo's going to match anything. And the threshold right to sign him would be much higher in terms of the compensation. But typically, the realistic offer sheet candidates are guys for whom the compensation threshold is not crazy, and it's players that are valued higher by the other team. And because you're so focused on Tuck, you're so focused on Benson, I think there's a chance that Buffalo could take their eye off the ball and then somebody could swoop in on Peyton Krebs and having seen something. So that's another reason why you have to be careful with Alex Tuck and kind of weigh everything and decide if it's worth it. Because if you sign him and Benson, well, there's not nearly enough money left to also fit Krebs unless you, let's say, jettison Jordan Greenway's contract, which I think wouldn't be the worst idea.
Krebs is a really tough one. Like, where do they want him to play? Where did he play? Where, you know, what should he be looking for? Like, hey, I was good on the top line in the playoffs. I should be paid like a top line player. The organization might be like, yeah, but really long term, you're probably our fourth line center. So, like, what are we doing here? That and he's got arbitration rights. I mean, he's the only player left now that they divested themselves a Kesselring yesterday that has that. And I honest to God, that's like a dart throw. I have no idea where that could end up.
Yeah, and I think, again, it highlights the fact that you could have a situation where one player feels like he's shown something. He has the first-round pedigree. And if the franchise sees him in a different spot long-term, if there's a discrepancy, that's exactly when an offer sheet is dangerous, because the player is far more likely to sign it. So to me, he's someone you have to watch carefully for that reason.
Matt, you ended up on Call St. Louis about Jordan Kyrou. I'm curious what you think about Matthew Knies as an idea for the Leafs to trade away. I would think Bowen Byram would have some appeal if he's indeed on the market to Toronto. They're talking about trying to get out from under Riley, and I could see Byram sliding in there as their number one defenseman. I don't know how well that'd go, but I think that's probably what they would want to do with him. Is there a match there? Are the Leafs really going to trade Matthew Knies?
Oh, geez, where do I start? I have so much to say on this topic. But in terms of just the fantasy trade, I can see the fit. The Leafs desperately need mobility on their blue line. They need basically what Morgan Riley was 8 years ago. Right. So Bowen Byram, pretty good, comparable there. I thought he was so good in the playoffs. I think you could make a case he was the best defenseman in the playoffs for Buffalo. I'm curious if you guys agree, but I thought I noticed him constantly. I was so impressed by Bo Byram in the playoffs. If he wants somewhere where he can be a number one, okay, yes, Toronto's a good fit. If you're willing to accept the whole trade within a division scenario. With Matthew Knies, I'm just confused. I'm so confused. You're a team trying to retool. You just got the first overall pick in the draft. You've missed the playoffs. You have a 23-year-old unicorn of a player who's 230 pounds and skates like he's 5'9", 180 pounds. Right. Why are you trading this guy?
I don't get it.
This guy is
right.
Part of your future. I don't understand. Other than the fact that, okay, because Knies' skill set is so unique and so coveted, if you can get someone to overpay, really massively overpay, fine, you entertain it. But other than that, my whole opinion on the Knies thing is I just don't understand. Isn't this the exact type of player you should be building around?
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Like, I mostly want to dismiss any time I hear about Knies, but it keeps cropping up, which makes me wonder, you know, whether or not that is in reality something that's attainable. I agree with you about Byram. I thought Byram was their best player in the Boston series. He troubled me a little more in the Montreal series, but I thought he was dynamite against the Bruins, Byram. I mean, he was just a horse, just all over the ice. So that's a player.
I was too focused on Aus being on the scoreboard.
That's a player that I think, you know, Kekalainen, when the offseason came here, Matt, a little earlier than we would have liked, of course, Kekalainen talked about wanting to extend Byram. He's so important. Our top 4D, I've been talking about it. I've been referring to it as the Sabres superpower this year. Kekalainen said similar words about their top 4D, but signing him to a contract that I would expect would land somewhere between Owen Power's $8 million and Dahlin's $11 million, that's three defensemen with those contracts, and I'm not sure that that's good team building.
Yeah, it's a fair question, especially when you'd be paying Bowen Byram basically that AAV to never play on the top pair, to never even be right on the top power play unit. Right. And for Bowen Byram, that's a consideration too. If you're thinking about the extension, I think if you're in a sign-and-trade scenario elsewhere, you're going to get a higher AAV. Mm-hmm. You're going to be paid to be a guy who's top pair, PP1. You're going to get better numbers as well, which even comes into play for his next contract way down the road. And I do think, you know, you look at the construction of that top four. Well, everybody's a lefty. I know that everyone has been asked to play their offside, but I do think Buffalo would be wise to try and find a natural righty to build into that pipeline. I know you have Radim Mirka coming long term, but you need, I think, someone in that top four or at least top six to be a more reliable natural righty. And then for Bowen Byram, because of the all lefty situation, he's never going to be ahead of Rasmus Dahlin on the overall depth chart, right? So I can see it, even though I just like the way he's fit and that top four was just dynamite this year. It is something that I think everybody has to be realistic about. If Bowen Byram is really thinking long-term, and I understand that he's happy in Buffalo in terms of just the actual team setup and where the franchise is going, but in terms of him just wanting to be the guy long-term, you have to be realistic.
I mean, I certainly understand the why would you trade Matthew Knies, and there's a little bit of why would you trade Byram, but, you know, that's what we're here for, right? Like, just you've got teams that have different strengths and weaknesses, and maybe there would be a fit there. Do you, Matt, really, if you were one of these GMs, would you be averse to trading in the division? I don't think I would. I don't know, like too much changes, and I would want to trust myself to figure out the rest of the build. You know, if you believe in it, do it. And I don't think I would shy away because of that.
I 100% agree. It's the same thing I always say when I'm trying to make trades in like my fantasy pools. I'm like, all I care about is my team. I don't care about what is happening
right.
with your team.
Right.
There's no ego involved. I'm just going to make my team better. And I think it applies to real life. I think the entire idea of trading within division being, I just think it's overblown. I think the exceptions might be if you have someone who's been a franchise institution for so long that it would be very emotional to have to face that player a lot. Okay, fine. It's like, you know, it's like Sidney Crosby's not getting traded to the Philadelphia Flyers, right. for example. You know
right.
what I mean?
Good
but
example.
Other than that, I've always felt the idea is overblown. Yes, I agree.
Are you old enough to remember the 93 Sabres Leafs when it was Andruchuk to Toronto?
And of course, the Grant Fuhr, Andruchuk situation. Fuhr. And yep, of course. I was 10 years old at the time.
Okay. And then Andruchuk went up there, and Andruchuk had kind of a reputation for, well, not coming through as well as we wanted him to in the playoffs. And then he went to Toronto and scored, like, I don't know, it wasn't 20 goals that year in the playoffs, but it was hot.
Big playoff, yeah.
On Gilmore's wing.
He finished with 54. He finished 54, but I have to say, the Leafs were in the Western Conference at the time.
Yes, that's right.
So, good point. That's right, it wasn't a divisional trade, right?
Good point.
It was a regional,
the bridge
geographic
delays,
trade. But
the bridge
not,
delays were the same, but that's right. It was not, that's right.
Yes.
Good point.
What one more for you on the Sabres, and then I would like more of a read from you on the way forward for the Leafs, Matt. Goaltending. You know, they had three guys. They carried three guys almost all year long. All three guys played. And I don't know, you know, the playoffs came, and it was uneven, and, you know, this guy got pulled, then this guy got pulled, then this guy got pulled again, and, like, we kind of were, you know, a bit of a yo-yo. But overall, their goaltending performed, I think, above expectations. It was a strength of the team. But I wonder about getting a guy that, you know, Hellebuck's name is out there. I don't know who else top-shelf goaltender-wise is available. Shesterkin's intriguing, but I've not heard anything about him being potentially on the trade block.
Bobrovsky?
Bobrovsky's a free agent, right? Do you think the Sabres should pursue, like, a stalwart, number one, highly paid goalie?
I don't think yet, especially just when you factor in what the cap hit would be, and they're already, you know, right up against it, trying to figure out everything with the forwards. But I think also because if you just look at the sum of what they got in net this year, I think that Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, Alex Lyon, also Colton Ellis, they were combined an above average group. And you look at what Carolina just won the Stanley Cup with, Freddie Anderson, Brandon Buffet. I think Buffalo's goaltending was as good as those two guys. Lyon and Luukkonen particularly, they both had really good stretches during the season. They both had their moments in the playoffs too. And I think overall, if you just have decent goaltending, and that's a pretty good floor to start with, I consider it actually more of a surplus that Buffalo has right now. I think you can make a case. Colton Ellis is probably one of the better number three goaltenders in the league. And then you can go four deep, and you have Devin Levi, who I think is someone that the Sabres should consider trading. Mm-hmm. He's just been blocked for so long. He's an undersized goalie, but he still has that cachet, having been a top prospect. I think he's got some trade value. So I think he's someone that I would put on the block if I'm Jarmo Kekalainen. And if you don't think that Levi's going to pass any of the other three guys, so I would stick with this group at least one more year, and then you can revisit next summer because Alex Lyon is a UFA and so is Colton Ellis, assuming neither guy signs an extension this summer.
Matt, do you plan to come down for the draft? I'm not sure we can promise you our pictures on the Jumbotron, but I don't want that to be a detriment.
We're mixing it up. We're going to have the excellent Stephen Ellis. He's our Daily Faceoff right. prospect analyst, so he will be making the journey instead of me for the draft.
And okay. ball hockey aficionado, Stephen Ellis, I believe, from following his Twitter.
That's right. So you right. know you're Stephen Ellis.
Yes, I do.
Exactly. And with the decentralized format, obviously, if it was the old school format, we'd be there with a larger contingent, but of course, the game has changed.
Well, how do you think that draft will lead off? Is Toronto, is it McKenna? Is like 8 out of 10 Dennis recommend McKenna, but the Swedish kid Stenberg has got his supporters. Like, do you think it'll be McKenna?
It has to be. And even though Ivar Stenberg has a really excellent skill set, two-way player, he might end up being just as good of a player as Gavin McKenna. If you're John Chayka and Matt Sundin, this is not the time to take that risk. You will be forgiven if you're wrong on Gavin McKenna. If he turns out to be a bust after being such a dominant junior player and pretty impressive at NCAA, that's okay. But if you do not pick him and you're wrong, it's an absolute disaster for a regime that comes in with not a huge amount of fan confidence around them. You cannot galaxy brain. You can galaxy brain your head coach and hire Jim Hiller. You can galaxy brain trading Joseph Woll and bringing in Emil Andre, who has great analytics. But you cannot friggin' do that with the first overall pick. It has to be Gavin McKinnon.
You can't do all of it. You can't do everything just on those terms. That's right. Very good.
Is everything peaceful with Austin Matthews?
From what I've heard, things are calmer than they were. And I shouldn't even say, because that implies they weren't calm, but at least it sounded like Matthews had questions about the direction of the franchise. Obviously, winning the draft lottery was a massive stroke of luck because you were bringing in Gavin McKinnon. He's someone who's going to be in the top six right away and able to produce as a rookie. So that does change the overall look of the franchise. I don't think the Leafs are out of the woods with Matthews by any means, but I think it's a situation where, okay, it sounds like he's at least happy to go forward starting the season. If the Leafs are in the toilet by December, you could see a Quinn Hughes situation play out and suddenly Matthews wants out. But from what I understand, he's at least on board for whatever happens in the next few months.
Very good, Matt. Always appreciate your time. Thanks again for the acknowledgement of what you saw that game one in Buffalo, and what you said about coming to games here was really a special year. Hope for more of that. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, guys, and I appreciate it. I managed to get to Buffalo even before the playoffs started and kind of just literally walk around talking to fans, and it was extremely special to be part of it, and cool. I won't forget it. So thank you, guys.
Cool. All right. Good
deal.
Matt.
All right.
Matt Larkin, dailyfaceoff.com. The draft in 8 days, right down the street. What street is that, you might be asking? What street is that? What do you mean right down the street? Well, I would go Millersport to the 290.
Are you going towards the water tower? Okay, yeah.
To the 33,
yeah, I would go
90 to 33.
Yeah, this is all wrong.
And then I'm in. Once I go all the way in.
Yeah.
Past Marble and Rye. Then that left,
yeah.
where all the lights are synchronized, and Michigan.
Yeah, I would go
park at the casino.
I'd go the other way on the 290. Go to the river, the 190 in downtown. Yeah, that's my preferred route.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Does your car agree? Does your phone agree?
I don't ask my phone. I have a brain.
You just decide for yourself how to drive, where to go. Wow, that's bold.
Yeah, I know. Crazy. I'm 61. I've managed to get everywhere I need to get.
Yeah, well, maybe not at the best rate of, best pace, but I go in, and then I go left, and then I go right, and then I go left, and I park in the casino ramp, and then I walk.
That seems far.
I mean, it's a good walk. It's a good walk. Wear the right shoes.
Yeah.
Jeremy White coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. He's got an event tonight. That we wanted to...
It's a great event. It's for he and Nate Geary's 100 Holes fundraiser at Wayland. He'll be on in a minute to tell us all about it. I went to it last year. I'm not going to make it tonight because I have a something else scheduled, but some really... Jarrell fill it in. A lot of really great raffle items and stuff. It's really a good party.
Yep. The update first, then we'll bring Jeremy on. 803-0550 is our number. We got a little window after Jeremy's visit. Brian Koziol coming up in just over an hour to recap day one of the U.S. Open, which has a lot left, by the way. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Thanks for joining us. This is WGR.